I don't know how much attention you pay to the bulletin and to the sermon title, but it's not right. And it's not Charlie's fault or Sheila's fault. Dreams feature big in today's scriptures and in the weeks leading up to Jesus' birth. And I have to admit, I'm not always sure I believe that God spoke through dreams until Friday night. I had the worst sleep Friday night. I couldn't get into a deep sleep, and I kept thinking, are you ready? Are you ready? And I tried to sleep, and I couldn't sleep. And then it was like a message says, check the bulletin. So I laid there tossing and turning all night, and first thing Saturday morning, looked at the bulletin and realized that I'd given the sermon title from last year's fourth Sunday in Advent. And ironically, today's sermon is called, Are You Ready? I need all the help I can get. Please pray with me. O God, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, for you are our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. A week or so ago, I was grazing at Sherway Mall. That's right, grazing, not shopping, because I didn't even have a list, and I always have a list when I go shopping. So I guess you'd say I was browsing, putting in time. Strangely, felt like I had to be there for some reason. I ran into several people I knew, most of them much more focused than I because they had lists, and I didn't. I found nothing I really needed or was looking for, but I stood in line at the bookstore for about 20 minutes to have the privilege of paying for something I didn't want or need. It wasn't all a waste of time, though, because I did see a book that caught my attention and made me think of today's sermon about Mary and Joseph. The book was titled, 1003 Great Things About Kids. It had all kinds of reverent and irreverent stories, of not about the Holy Family, but about children and parenting in general, such as a good thing about having a small child by your side is that you can board airlines first, such as a dad doing errands with a baby gets all kinds of help from everybody around. Nobody loves your grilled cheese sandwiches more than your own children do, or grandchildren. One whole section of the book was devoted to the great milestones of the child's life. Day zero. Nobody you love so much has ever caused such excruciating pain. No doubt written by a mother. Day one. Your friends can't tell your baby from any of the other babies in the nursery, but to you, she's the most beautiful. 7 months. It sounds like goo-goo, but you know he's saying, I think the universe is steadily expanding. 2 years. The terrible twos mark the beginning of a 20-year-long age of rebellion. 7 years. You're learning, your child is learning the meaning of capitalism by negotiating with the tooth fairy. 15 years, your child finally comes out of the bathroom the first time in 6 months, then goes right back in. 18 years, off to university. Nobody you love so much has ever caused you such pain. Whether or not you have direct experience of parenthood, I think we can all appreciate the awesome and daunting and sometimes frustrating responsibilities that parenting requires. Parenting is a vocation in and of itself, one that brings both joy and pain, and lots of prayers for help in the midst of seemingly unimaginable situations. And whether or not we are parents ourselves, children, long before Jesus and throughout history since then, are a part of our lives, and they're a very important part of the world. And they can help us see the world through fresh eyes. We know from the Gospel according to Luke that Mary said a magnificent yes to becoming the mother of our Lord. No doubt there was a lot of fear and trepidation when the angel Gabriel first appeared to Mary, but the angel's presence and grand message soon changed Mary's stance to one of gracious obedience. At that time, Mary would have had no idea that the course she was on would lead her to the foot of a cross, to experience an excruciating pain for the one so dearly loved to her. Joseph's situation, on the other hand, is a bit different. We don't know exactly how he felt when he learned of Mary's pregnancy, but we can imagine. And we do know, according to St. Matthew's Gospel, that Joseph wanted to spare Mary from public disgrace, so he was about to dismiss her quietly. Only thing is, it's difficult for us in 2022 to know what dismissing her quietly really meant. I suspect it would have included a lot of things like keeping a large pregnant secret about this young girl and her condition, possibly having her hide behind closed doors, not to be seen by the world. Maybe it would be like sending her to a home for unwed mothers. But this secret was not one to be kept from the world. God intervened again, this time by sending an angel to Joseph in a dream. Joseph had not been the least bit ready for a holy birth, but he sure paid attention to this dream. In the dream, Joseph saw more than the unusual pregnancy, more than the responsibilities of becoming a father. He saw, somewhat vaguely, a future laid out for this child who was to be named Jesus. A child whose destiny it was to bless his people with love, with justice, with dignity, and with a new understanding of God's grace and goodness. When Joseph awoke from this dream, his heart and his mind had been changed. The situation, which had been once seen as a problem, had been changed dramatically into one of profound anticipation. The problem had been turned into a charge, a responsibility, not only to name the child Jesus, but to be a father to this little one who in the beginning would be a helpless infant and who would grow up to live out God's intentions in ways that Joseph could not imagine. It was simply and deeply impressed upon Joseph that he was to get ready, that he was to welcome this special child, that he was to be himself a participant in the story of God's love and grace. Which makes me wonder, am I really ready? How ready are we to welcome Jesus? How ready are we to be a part of telling and revealing and living his love in the world? All of which makes me wonder how we participate in this story of new life, new love, and amazing grace. The incarnation, God made flesh, it's a doctrine better experienced than explained. We have this story presented to us year after year, as we did last week with the pageant, a story of both majesty and peculiarity and surprise. We may wonder why it happened in that time and in that place, but I'm here to remind you that it's happening again, and soon. It's happening again as we count down the hours until God will enter yet again this broken and hurting world. It's happening again as we wait for God to enter our hurting and broken lives. And the question is, are we ready? Are we ready to welcome Jesus and what that means? Are we prepared to participate in the story of revealing God's love to the world? It's a question we can ask all year round because there's so many places that love needs to overcome hate and fear and prejudice and racism. Are we ready to welcome Jesus in new and deeper ways? It's a commentary on the way we celebrate Christmas that the biggest problem many of us might be dealing with today is that most of the people we're going to shop for, if we find time, already have everything they need. I don't know what in the world to get my father this year, said one woman. Last year I bought him a pearl-handled back scratcher. The year before that it was a gold-plated cherry picker. This year I'm fresh out of ideas. That was me at Sherway the other day, fresh out of ideas. We can imagine this scene because many of us have been a part of it in a fairly average Canadian household on Christmas morning. When all the expensively wrapped gifts have been opened and the room looks like an explosion in a Chinese paper goods factory, the final inventory is taken. Father receives 2 bathrobes, 6 shirts, 8 ties, 4 pairs of socks, a miniature TV for the bathroom, and a set of knitted booties for his golf clubs. Mother acquired a new negligee set, 3 slips, an espresso coffee machine, she doesn't like coffee, an automatic popcorn popper from Junior, who loves popcorn, a copy of The Joy of Sex from Susie, the teenager who thought she ought to read it, and the latest, most complicated sewing machine, which she will never learn to use. Junior racked up a new laptop, an oversized tennis racket, 2 running outfits, 3 shirts, 2 books, which he will never read, a Bible from Susie, who thought he ought to read it, and a high-powered dirt bike. 14-year-old Susie came off with a robe, 3 sets of pajamas, a smart TV for her bedroom, a copy of Jack the Ripper from Junior, who thought she ought to read it, and a round-trip ticket to New York City to visit her friends after Christmas. It's rather obvious, in short, that this typical North American family has everything. In spite of inflation, they've helped keep the economy moving forward, gratifying both the local merchants and the tax collector in Queen's Park and Ottawa. And they have cluttered their households with many things that are destined for the mission shop or the garage sale when they decide they have to move because they're overladen where they live now. They could not possibly want for anything that they don't already have. Excuse me. What I don't have is some water. But let's look at them again, more closely this time. Zoom in, and you'll see that Dad's hair is thinner and thinner, and the worry lines are deeper and deeper. His promotion at work has not come with as an unexpected blessing because he's had so little time with his family that now on Christmas morning he feels like a stranger in his own home. And he's out of touch with his own feelings. Several times during the pre-Christmas season, he felt twinges of nostalgia and almost managed to get a hold of scenes from his childhood memory bank. But each time, his energies and his schedule were so preempted by other things that he had to let them go before he really experienced them. He's been very much aware of his mortality since his predecessor in the vice president's office suffered a sudden heart attack. And some days he's just so tired, so bone-weary, tired of the rat race, that the idea of his dying presents itself with more attraction than repulsion. Mom, too, is growing older and seems to be at a very nervous stage in her life's journey. She belongs to 2 spas, a diet club, and an exercise group, but is still 20 pounds overweight. And she takes enough pills of various kinds to fill several bean bags every week. Her hand shakes, her voice quivers, and she cries a lot, often the most unexpected reason. She frequently shouts at her kids, curses herself, and locks herself in the bathroom to be alone with her problems. Even the children, 16 and 14, have their troubles. The constant temptation of drugs and alcohol, barely hanging on to a D in math. They've already thrown in the towel on chemistry and will probably have to go to summer school. They worry about their complexion. They feel betrayed when friends don't invite them to a party. They're running so fast but they don't know who they are and they're afraid to turn around and look back. Now, are these people who have everything or people who need everything? What do they really need for Christmas? Like all of us, I think they need time. Time to sort out their lives, time for being together, time for getting to know one another. Have you ever noticed how you can spend time, a lot of time with somebody and not really know them? They need time for sharing themselves at the deepest levels of human communication. They need holy time, time to sense life's deeper dimensions, time to sense eternal mysteries, time to dwell with this God of righteousness, whose very being conveys meaning to all of life's actions and relationships. Time to experience the blessings of a world that wants to bless them if they'll only let it. What do we really need for Christmas? I wonder if we need space. Space for seeing life as it is, for seeing millions of people who are starving to death, and millions more who are dying from diseases that could easily be treated if they had some of the money that's sitting in our savings account. I wonder if they need, or we need, space for realizing how shallow life can be when it's lived merely for the pleasures of the moment without any regard to the future or consequences. I wonder if we need space for standing back and looking at our own lives so that we can mend our ways and become wholesome, worthy children of God. Simply put, we need the Christ of Christmas and the renewal that Christ brings. That's what it all comes down to, isn't it? We need to hear and receive the real message of Christmas, that God has entered the human arena to dwell with us, not to punish us, not to push us around, but to walk with us here and now, a spirit of love and grace and justice and goodness that is available to us every day. It's so easy to become lost in the busyness of this world, trying to cope from day to day, trying to make a living, trying to care for our children, trying to keep up with rising mortgage rates, trying to live with the pains and the injustices that surround us and our families. It's so easy to become lost trying to cope that sometimes we've forgotten who we are and whose we are. We belong to a God who loves us so much that God will even intervene in our dreams to avoid embarrassment, to guide us, to assure us of love and grace. So as we draw nearer to Christmas, as we pass through the familiar landmarks of this season, which I love and which are beautiful, we are called to remember our true identities. Until coming down to Christmas Eve itself, we know that we are at home where we belong in the loving arms of God. Until we know that we who thought we had everything realize that we have nothing until we are ready to welcome God through Jesus into our lives. For He is the source of joy and peace. Mary said a magnificent yes. Joseph woke from his dream and said yes. Can we do the same? Can we take some precious moments in these final hours of Advent and prepare ourselves to lay everything down before the newborn child, the King, all that we are, all that we hope for, all that we fear, and all that we love? For in this way, we will participate in new life. In this way, we will fulfill our calling to become God's servants of love and grace in this world. A story of hope, peace, joy, and love that needs to be told by you and by me. I think you're ready. May God help us.